This is the Astrology University podcast, helping you find inspiration, insight, and connection through the study of astrology. And I'm your host, Tony Howard.
Hey, and welcome back to the Cosmic Eye Monthly Forecast Scorpio Season. I'm your host, Vanessa Montgomery from Astro All Stars. And today, I'll say mystery guest because it's Scorpio season is the fabulous Jason Holly from jasonholly.net. And he will be representing with his moon and Venus in Scorpio. Hi, Jason. Thanks for coming back to the show.
Hi, Vanessa. Good to be here.
Now, I'm really interested in Jason sharing some Scorpio moon and Venus insights, even though Scorpio is the sign that's probably least likely to share some insights because it's all about the hidden and the private and the I'm not telling you. So, right. Jason, the fixed sign, fixed water, interpersonal, ruled by Pluto or Mars, depending which tradition you're going with, maybe a bit of both these days. Mid-season, it's autumn for you guys, spring here in the southern. So the environment definitely doesn't match the astrology, but, you know, astrology is so almost completely informed by the environment. So I always like to cleave to that. So let's hear it straight from the witch's mouth.
Oh wait, I guess I should cackle.
Yeah, it's a spell cast a spell on us.
That's better. Well, you know, when I think about Scorpio, the word that always immediately comes to mind is depth. You know, the desire to go to the depth, the desire to go to the deep, and the various different motivations that can be behind that desire. But there's just an always a sort of wanting to move past whatever the surface is, move past whatever the appearances are, and to get to something much more, deeper and more fundamental, more core. Those kinds of words are to me the drive that is in Scorpio that comes, you know, right out of Libra time, when we're looking at the what I might call the horizontal, you know, like sort of like all the cartographies, all the possibilities, you know, in this way. And in Scorpio, it's sort of like, no, I want to drill into one of those places, you know, go deep, do the archaeology of that particular place. It's like an archaeological energy in Scorpio.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, like the drill down. And you're, of course, a sun in Libra. So I guess it's like, hey, it's all light and fluffy. And then you're down in the depths quickly.
Something like that. Well, my sun is conjunct Pluto, so I'm not sure there's ever a light and fluffy. Brian Clark actually one time said to me, well, that doesn't really count as Libra now, does it?
Interesting.
So, you know, in some sense, you know, it's a little bit of both of those. And, you know, they kind of just keep referring back to each other. If you think in modern rulerships, there's a reception, right, between the Pluto Venus. So
absolutely. And that suits your work, doesn't it? You go quite in depth and it's very metaphysical and into the psychic and the drilling down into dreams, and psychotherapeutic.
Yeah, that's very much, I mean, I think that both Libra and Scorpio, but Scorpio in particular, you know, has a very psychological orientation, you know, just a natural instinct towards, you know, understanding and conceptualizing that range of experience. And maybe the conceptualizing is more of the Libran space, but the Scorpio space is really getting into it, getting down into the muck of it, engaging with it, feeling it. You know, there's a piece of intense feeling that is also, I think, very connected to Scorpio, that desire for intensity and the potency of that. You know, there's an intensity desire, there's an intimacy desire, and one can be mistaken for the other, right? Like intensity can seem like the only way to get deep or to get close, when actually there are many ways to become deep and close, you know.
Yes, this is true. That's a really great point to distinguish, actually. I'm thinking about the provocative nature. Scorpio likes to provoke and just tap on things that it thinks, what's under there? Let's see if we can get a reaction. I think of a lot of, you know, the signs as well as the modes in the signs. I just think of the term relentless. So I think about, you know, it's just, it doesn't turn off. It's like this fundamental part of someone's nature. And I always think it's so important to really understand that, because you've got to respect it and not try to stop it. It's more like direct it somewhere where it can be useful. And again, I'm thinking of your career and the angle you take on your career. Yes, it's astrology, but the way that you use that with psychology and psychotherapy in your retreats, you've really aligned it with what sounds like astrologers would see as your nature. So that must be really satisfying for you.
Yeah, I really do feel that way. That's an interesting, that's a good way of saying it. And, you know, very much so, I think, because I do think that the beauty of Scorpio, of course, is, or one of, is I think the quality of deep feeling, right, that is there, you know, and you know, as with all the water signs, the emotional is the really the key. And, you know, the interesting thing about it, I've always found, you know, with the water signs, the way they are, right, you have Pisces, who's a fish, you know, totally undefended from the water. You know, Cancer has a kind of a molting defense, right? You know, like it's got a shell, but then it molts, it's soft for a while, it reshells up. Scorpio is, you know, all armor. I mean, the scorpion is a war machine. You know, it's covered. I mean, all of its body is this and this, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it can seem so, you know, the reputation of Scorpio is so much about having so much power and strength and, you know, force, and don't mess with a Scorpio, you know, and plotting and all of that. But I think what we have to remember is there's something that all of that defense is protecting, right? All of that defense is protecting something that is actually, again, the tender element of water, you know, it's like, and it's one of the things I think that's most powerful to realize about Scorpio process is like, that is still a water sign, but it's just like the amount of fortification, the Marsing up or Plutoing up, it is so massive, in part because there's something intensely tender that is being, you know, protected. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really think that's a very interesting area with Scorpio, because that's what I sense personally from Scorpios is this extreme vulnerability. And it's, you know, some people, I suppose, in our sort of culture want to attack vulnerability as well. And it's got this, like, I can feel that too. Like, I definitely am, you know, not as comfortable with vulnerability a lot of the time. I've got Chiron on my Aries moon, got that sense. If it's a village, that's the one that gets attacked, you know, the scapegoat. And I think Scorpio can attract those things. It's my Scorpio friends, there's a real vulnerability, and when they embrace that strength of what they can do best, which is, you know, they'll say, I'll go down into, you know, they'll just go off by themselves, they'll go and wrestle their demons, as they say, like they'll get into the muck and in the water, and they just roll around with their stuff, and then they come back out, you know, that transformation process, and they understand that they need to do that, and they do it regularly. And they just take care of it themselves rather than try to pull someone down with them.
Which I will say, I think does happen when Scorpio process is complex, it's like in the, you know, in a complex of some kind, like a psychological, is that it can often be that there is this feeling of wanting to work it out. You know, we're going to go to the depths together. We have to get in there, and we have to fight, and we have to have deep emotional exchanges and process it and go through it. And it's only real if we're both bleeding. it's like that's the Scorpio model of intimacy, right? I mean, it's like, that's what it's real. So I think that can you know, when people have not developed what you were just describing of that process of like taking responsibility for their own emotional reality, the tendency in Scorpio can be very strong to insist on working it out. And often they get bigger and bigger, chasing the other person to work it out, which only makes the other person see them as scarier and scarier, you know, but behind all that is usually a lot of like terror. I mean, there's a kind of an interesting thing with Scorpio where there's like a, you know, terror of abandonment, terror of entrapment, you know, that both seem to be in there. And it's complicated, you know, there's a complication to all of that.
And you were saying, I thought this was hilarious. You were saying
right. That the moon, you know, Tony Tony was telling me that when he was doing keywords research, you know, about Google searches and who looks for what in astrology, that among the moons, it was moon in Scorpio was like by a landslide the most searched. Like people want help figuring out this crazy experience called moon in Scorpio.
Totally. And what I thought was it is going to be a Scorpio vibe that's going to look to something metaphysical like astrology to find the answers, right? So it kind of doubles up.
Yeah, it does. It goes deep. You know, I think that that situation is very descriptive of the Scorpio thing, is they're wanting to look, searching for answers. You know, somebody help me really get to the core of this.
And do you notice patterns? And I assume it's different for all astrologers, but I'd be very, it's a question I'm going to ask people that have seen a lot of clients. Do you see a real pattern with who comes to you? Because I get a lot of 12th house and 8th house placements by landslide. There's often Scorpio in there, more on the house placements.
Okay, right. Honestly, I feel like it's been all over the place. I definitely see patterns, you know, during for periods of time, you know, like so for maybe a couple of months, there'll be a lot of people coming in. Sometimes it seems related to shared transits, but not always, you know, it just seems like sometimes maybe. And I always think, oh, maybe I'm also to be learning something in that, you know, around that area. But overall, I don't really think there's a theme in my practice of who comes and seems like it's all over the place.
So maybe you're not calling it in. I feel like I must call it in. I get a lot of Chiron too. It's like if I decide something I'm interested in looking into more, of course, that's who shows up.
That happens for sure. Yeah. That I find, like if I have a talk coming up on a topic, you can be sure that a few people will walk in with exactly that popping in their chart.
Isn't that amazing?
Or even that they'll be writing to me saying, I need to deal with this in my, you know, you get a lot of astrology fluent people and, you know, they're like, oh, I want to look at Venus. And then like, oh, that'd be great.
It's amazing how that happens. Shows that we're, you know, that's that Scorpio thing, isn't it? We're all connected under this deeper level, this sort of psychic, who knows, metaphysical level. So what about ideas about the witch? This Scorpio season, of course, does host Halloween, All Hallows, as well as from a variety of countries, different festivals of light about the sun going into the shorter days. I've noticed so many Scorpios, even if they're like super conservative and straight looking, they do identify with that image of the witch. And that image is itself actually just propaganda, but it's like it's been embraced and there's something in it that Scorpio does relate to. Do you relate in some way to that sort of magician, the witch, but more the witchy side of things, or however you would say that?
Oh, for sure. I tend to think of it as a sort of a experience with encounter with the dark, you know, and with the underworld of experience, right? And and you know, the way I would think about it is, you know, I think about the cross quarter that happens in the middle of Scorpio, which gets honored in all these different traditions in these different ways. And where I live, it particularly connected to the Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, and it's, you know, seen as this time when the ancestors can communicate with you in a more direct way, right? The veils are thin. The connection with the underworld is stronger. You know, it's like, and particularly in our world, you know, one of the most interesting things that we see in like in mythological material is that, you know, from about Mesopotamia onward in the development of the Western mythologies that we Western astrologers are heir to, all the stories include all these trips to the underworld that have to be taken, right, by various heroes, by Inanna, who was Aphrodite, you know, Venus. But there are all these trips to the underworld. Mm. And part of the issue is that we imagine ourselves separate from the underworld now, right? And so you got to go down there as if you weren't already, you know, part of it. You know, in a lot of like indigenous and land-based cultures, there's no trips to the underworld in the mythology because there's never a sense that they've separated away from the underworld. Mm. But in our culture, we really want to put a lot of things down and we're not down there. So Scorpio, it's the time of the year when, you know, it's up here, especially where I am, it's like, it's getting barer and you really have to acknowledge that, you know, you've got to go down, you've left something important down there. You know, there's something that's been buried and you have to go get it and talk to those. Oh, it looks like I'm frozen again.
I can hear you though. I can hear you.
Okay.
Are you back?
Yeah, I feel like that's probably connected to what we're talking about.
Probably. Part of your psyche must be, don't give it all away. Keep right, it. Right. Yeah, so secrets. I always say,
and
with Scorpios
know that place, right? And I think that's why the witch, the other, you know, certain, the place that knows the underworld, the place that knows that. And a lot of times it knows it, because I do feel that Scorpio planets tend to carry an awareness of trauma or past betrayal of some kind. Like, I do think that's in there. It's a little hard to say that's always it. I wouldn't claim to know that, but in my experience, it's like, the Scorpio planets know something, they have seen something and experienced something that is of a darker quality than we would like to acknowledge in everyday Libra life.
Yeah, so different to Libra, if you think about it like that. And then so different to Sagittarius bookending.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always feel like Sagittarius is always looking back at Scorpio saying, you'll never get me down there again.
Bye.
I'm out.
Well, I guess Sagittarius being one, Sagittarius is, you know, if you follow it through in the continuum, Sagittarius has done its jail time.
Yeah.
I'm free now. Right. I'm out.
It's been down there.
Free pass. Right. See us. Yeah. Wouldn't want to be us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that feels very much the Sagittarian attitude towards the Scorpio intensity. And it can feel to Sagittarius like needless drama and sticky and like, I don't want to drown in there with you.
Yeah, it's definitely a different level. That said, I know a lot of Scorpios and have probably learned the most from them, and Pisces, definitely. Their planets all fall in my seventh house mostly, or I meet them through work in the sixth. So, you know, regardless of everyone's sign, you're going to meet people representing in that area of life where their planets fall in your chart. And I always think that's an interesting one to note and just embrace it. The inconvenient truths is a good way to put it, as I was writing this, thinking, yes, the inconvenient truth. Because, you know, his Sagittarius were all with the truth, but really the most inconvenient truth is Scorpio world, isn't it? And do they dare say it? Do they dare bring it out from the underworld? Will they be scapegoated for it? You know, no, it's you, not me. You know, when you bring something up to talk about, no, it's all you, when the Scorpio is left wearing it.
Right. Yeah. If you're the one who brings it forward, you're often the one who's associated with. But exactly. It's like there's that which has been repressed or suppressed, you know, Scorpio can't help but unearth it. It's almost like a psychic compulsion.
Absolutely.
To pull that and, you know, reveal that. And it's really, you know, the drive is just so strong to bring everything forward, and to really, what I think it has to do with is like also the desire to feel intensely everything that there is to feel, you know, like to have the intense experience of all possible experiences. And so in our world, which wants to constantly, you know, we're in a world that loves the day and hates the night, at least largely speaking. And so in our world, Scorpio is going to get associated with dark in part because it wants the whole range of experience, the whole spectrum of emotions, right? It wants to have lived it all fully. And you know, that includes the darker side of things, you know, to know the experience of intense anger or hatred or jealousy. Those words are very Scorpio words, you know, to any form of intense feeling is there. And so it's a powerful curriculum, you know, it's a lot to learn in it. Yeah.
So just embrace it, people with Scorpio planets or friends. Embrace them. Feel it all, I guess, with the water signs, especially Scorpio, feel it all. The hidden, the psychic level. I'll move on after this one, but the psychic level of Scorpio, it's so real, isn't it? That laser-like quality feels psychic. Is it psychic or is it just how do you pick up on things that other people don't see? How do you feel like that mechanism might be working?
It's interesting. You know, when I think of psychism, I think of the water signs and the fire signs. But the operation of it feels very different to me. You know, with the fire signs, it feels highly intuitive hunches, yes. jumps to the unexpected or jumps somewhere. With the water signs, it feels so much more about a level of connectedness with the waters, with the things that connect all of us. You know, one of the things that I was thinking of when you said earlier, Scorpio wants to get to the metaphysical connection below. I was thinking of like the mycelium, you know, the yeah. mushroom network all over the world.
Yes.
Which feels to me a very Scorpio network, you know, in some sense, like under the earth.
And, underground, literally.
So I think that there's a connectedness that's going on to that, to those deep waters, that therefore you get information that isn't exactly psychic in that jump sense of fire, but it is, it appears that way because of the connectedness that's there. And we see it with Pisces too, particularly, you know, it's like with the water, I think all the water signs, there's just the emotional attunement is so great that there's information that comes, you know, in that way, you know. So for instance, like Scorpio psychic process doesn't usually involve like channeling and higher, you know, this thing. I think it's often things come up like almost like a cave, you know, water in a cave that suddenly reveals a picture of what's really happening, you know, or something like that. The witch's cauldron that stills and you gaze in, or
interesting. Yeah. And is that how you sense it yourself? Like your main, what would you say, extrasensory sensitivity? Is that how what it feels like to you?
It is. I think for me, there's also a very physical body-based piece that I'm not sure is Scorpio, but it could be. But for me, that my there's a physical qualities of that, like sensual piece that reads. Perhaps I have Mars in Taurus, so maybe it's because the ruler is in Taurus. It could be. You know, I never thought about it that way. It's interesting.
Yeah,
to think.
Interesting.
Because it's very body-based. That's my mode of when I get information. It's definitely physical, sensate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I always find those bridges interesting because I've got so much fire. I've definitely got access to that intuitive flash. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely, I've got Mars in Pisces and I definitely have a bit of the water or something. It's more intuitive, but there's this other way as well that things come to me. And I don't know that it's psychic or whatever it is, unless the person tells me and they're like, how did you know that? And I think I'm telling a joke and they're like, how did you know that? And I'm like, no.
Well, you know, one of the things in the more archaic English than we all are speaking now, people would used to say, right, like, I felt it in my waters, right?
Yes.
You know, felt it in my, like, they'll say something, they felt it in, and which is, I think that's what we're talking, you know, it's like, if somebody says that, it doesn't sound like they got a flash of something. It's more like they felt the movement. You know, I often think with the moon, it's like, you know, it moves the waters of the tides and also moves the waters of each of our moons, pulls the waters out and the other person pulls the tides of the other person. So I think there's just this ebb and flow thing going on with water all the time that you're, and if you're in that, you're getting information, you know, and sometimes too much, right? Like with Pisces, it can really be a flood, you know, there's no shell, you know, you know, with the
there's
other
no
two
distinguishing
water signs.
Boundary. Is it you or is it me? Is it yours or is it mine?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Now, Scorpio is very, very keen on boundary and which one it is. I think it is.
Or I remember Brian Clark, who was my original teacher. He, you know, was always quite amusing. And I remember him talking about the Scorpio Taurus axis. And he's like, Taurus is the body and Scorpio wants your body. He's like, Taurus is like, my sensual, beautiful body. And Taurus is like, I want your sensual, beautiful body. Come hither.
Yeah, right. Oh, I love that. Yeah, right.
And I thought that translated to, there's Taurus with the piles of gold and Scorpio's like, I know just what to do with that. I'm going to, and I've seen that with a lot of Scorpios, again, with that relentless kind of fundamental nature, moving towards what's someone else's wealth or what someone else has, but they their intention is to completely immerse the person, their wealth, their stuff, and do something with it. They want to join forces. They want to merge.
Right. They want to do, there's a strong transformational urge with Scorpio, right? And one of the things that I've always thought of with that polarity, you know, if Taurus is formation, you know, bringing things and putting things into form and accumulating and you know, it's Scorpio's transformation, right? It breaks things down and it begins circulation again. You know, it gets things moving again.
Yes.
But it can mean, and one of the things you'll see a lot with Scorpio planets is like they move around seeing Taurus everywhere they look, meaning the tendency is to see people as stuck. You know, the tendency is to look over there and think, oh, that person is stuck. You know, like everybody needs to change. Everybody needs to, you know, there can be a relentless pursuit of, you know, everybody needs to change. I need to keep everybody changing, you know, and tends to see the other person as somehow stuck or withholding or walled off and fortified, and they have to break the fortification, which only creates more fortification.
Yes.
And then the opposite too. Yeah.
Let's make some mud together.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, yeah. Right. And if you're over there in Taurus and you're trying to hold on, you tend to pull in people who want to break through the wall. You know, if you put a fortress up, a fortress is an invitation to a battering ram. Like Troy and the Greeks, like, you know,
you
do that.
It's so that polarity. So let's talk about that on the full moon, new moon situation when we get to that. But first of all, we're going to get to pitfalls of Scorpio/Scorpio season. We get all the good stuff with Scorpio, the obsession, the trust issues, the betrayal, the power struggles. It's so dynasty, revenge, jealousy. I think if you're writing a drama, you would just really lean into Scorpio themes and pit them against Taurus. That would be a great writing prompt.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. And because Scorpio does have those associations with all of, like, you know, the mafia don and the femme fatale and, you know, all of these things. Like, one of the things that I see for Scorpio people is and not just because of astrology saying those things, but just generally, it's like, frequently there's a feeling of, why is everybody so scared of me? You know, because the internal experience of the person is often not that they are big and scary or whatever. It's often that they're actually feel, again, that vulnerability that's at the very heart of the Scorpion is this vulnerable, tender water. But there's often a lack of a realization that your energy is big and strong. And so there can be this tendency to have very strong reactions and not even track the strength of it, like, you know, not really see how big you are, you know, like not see the potency of the defense. And that's a big one that can come up for Scorpios, I think, and I think one of the things they most want to hear is, I trust you, you know, like there's a desire to be trusted, actually, oddly enough, right at the core, like, you know, that to feel and for them to then be able to say that is also a huge, you know, a psychological achievement to create experiences of trust.
Yes. Very interesting. That's very interesting. Just thinking about what's reputation, Scorpio reputation and lived experience. I'm thinking of the Scorpios I know or strong Scorpio moons, more the sun, I think, as well, because it's so conscious, are the most loyal people I've ever met. I still know them. I know one she's got everything in Scorpio plus Scorpio, Pluto in Scorpio on all of that. And she's like, usually I don't know people for a long time. Like what I've noticed about her, she relentlessly goes through these periods of transformation. It's like she can't help herself peel off layers, and that includes experiences and people. But she's like, you know, but you're still there. And I'm like, yeah, because I really appreciate that. And maybe it's from the astrology. I really see it and I respect it. I always know they're the people that will tell me the truth, the real truth. And they'll never shy away from it. They won't think, oh, I'll save myself and not get associated with that. They will tell you. And so that's very valuable to me. And I think that's part of their beautiful value. And a lot of the stuff that is Scorpio's value is shunned in our world.
Yeah. And right. Well, I mean, this is the thing. It's exactly, you know, it's a sign of the night. It's a sign of the underworld. It's a sign of the things that, you know, can make people scared at night. You know, it's that kind of material. And yet, if you go through that together, you know, there is a kind of bonding and an attachment
that and can a trust, really be powerful. A deep trust.
And a trust, exactly. Yeah.
Very interesting.
You know, it's these Mars ruled signs. I think about this with Aries too. You know, I always think about, you know, combat veterans and the bond that they have when they've gone through that together, right? Or
trauma
those
bonding.
kinds of experience. Trauma bonding, it's true, actually. Yeah, trauma, right. But it does create, you know, a deep, like, it's like we've been to hell together, you know, it's that kind of experience. And you know, there's nobody you want more around than a Scorpio friend or a friend with Scorpio planets if you're going through hell. Like, that they are not afraid of hell.
Yes.
You know, they've already been there. You know, that again, that's kind of what I feel when I think about Scorpio planets. They've already been, they've seen something, they know something, they've been touched by that cold hand of Pluto, right? You know, like they've experienced Hades. So the fear factor is not the same. It's not to say they don't have fear, but there is a familiarity with it regardless. There's always going to be a familiarity there. Yeah,
that's true. And what I've noticed about, the Scorpio, strong Scorpio friends, is they relish the opportunity to dive into that trench with you. I'm here for you. Let's go. Like, they're excited about what most people will just back away from.
Right.
Exciting.
Yeah. Right. Right. No, I often called my work when I was really, you know, a therapist with, you know, individuals for long-term therapy, and that chapter of my life for the last, you know, 15 years or so, I often felt like part of it was like Virgil, who, you know, is the one who leads Dante through the layers of hell and the layers of purgatory, and then doesn't go into paradise. You know, that's Beatrice comes and does
boring.
The paradise round.
Paradise, yeah. Boring. I'm going to go back and save someone else.
Right. Yeah. Virgil keep, you know, stays in there, and, you know, you get the feeling that Virgil's seen it and therefore, you know, can walk with him. And that's why I think this familiarity with death also means a familiarity with transformation, because there is no transformation without death, right? There's things, the old must die for the new to be born, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's no way to do it. So someone who knows death will be able to do the transformation, right?
It's absolutely. And that's what we really miss out on, I think, with the way things are in our culture. You know, the other cultures had that familiarity and they would embrace and have something positive about that part of the cycle. And we don't have that. So there's this massive fear of death that we can be manipulated by, which is also kind of the shadow of Scorpio.
I mean, you know, the existential psychologist would say everything is basically denial of death. You know, everything we do. But beyond that, I was thinking about Michael Mead, you know, the mythologist and storyteller. He told this one story at an event I went to. He was talking about, I don't remember, I'm not even sure if he named what culture this was in, but basically the ancestors were saying to the living, to the living people who could speak to them, like, you know, we're getting really tired of people walking ass first into the underworld. Like, you know, they're like, when our relatives come to us, when they die, because they're trying to get out, you know, they don't want to go in and they get pulled in. And they said, we're getting tired of meeting people's asses before we meet their faces down here. I was like, that is so right. You know, because you have this feeling that people used to walk into the underworld looking right at, you know, like there's a, it's part, because again, in a sense, you never separated it. It's part of the flow of life, right? The underworld, the darkness, and people don't want to go there. And so, everybody's like, they're walking in backwards because they won't go in. And I just love that. And that's the thing. I think Scorpio, the planets in your chart that would be willing to go in head on are those planets. You know, that is the place that can take you and recover a whole level of experience that we are mostly trying to not have, which has in it all those gifts, right? And we're back to Pluto and the underworld and all the rich treasures that are in there. It's like so much has been lost by sealing off the underworld, you know, by sealing it off. And again, this is the season where the veil's thin, where the doors to the underworld become more open and the portals open. So it's a powerful, you know, possibility of Scorpio process is to walk right into the underworld instead of, you know, get pulled in unwillingly.
Empowering. It's like embracing your own power. There's so much in this. Gosh, it's giving me lots of good ideas. I'll go back to one quick thing. When you know, you're talking about the little scorpion, people think that it's small, but your energy is quite big. I'm thinking that is does speak of Pluto, you know, small things, this tiny planet, small things are very powerful and actually very big. It does go with that rulership in that way. I think it it does balance both. Let's move on to things to do in Scorpio season, and then we'll get to our classic signs. So things to do in Scorpio season, what do you think?
I mean, one of them that just so strongly comes to mind is honor the ancestors. You know, again, that's partly where I live and this time of year. But I think that's a really huge one. And really be willing to be in communication with that which is not is no longer visible with usual vision, right? Like to be willing to connect with whatever that may be in one's life.
Celebrate the Scorpio stuff.
Themes. And right. And you know, go on an archaeology dig, you know, very literally maybe, but also, you know, metaphorically, you know, it's a really powerful time to travel and, you know, encounter who whatever has been repressed or whatever's been put away to be willing to kind of, you know, re-engage with that world.
Do a class, do a retreat, find a technique. I think of holotropic breath work, which has been called rebirthing.
That's powerful.
Perfect. Perfect. Plumb your depths or someone else's.
Both make sense to me.
Do an active imagination on a nightmare or a fear, you know, just to take back that power and start to co-author rather than be trapped behind the door, fearing what's on the other side, scratching.
and the same in relationships, right? Like it's a good time actually to bring up things that are difficult. And there's often the energy to stay with what is hard rather than to evacuate into whatever dissociations and denials and all those things. There's an energy that supports staying with what's difficult, you know, just staying with. It's not even, you know, the pitfall, of course, can be to get really intense and process and, you know, go through it all. But really what we're talking about is just the willingness to just be with the uncomfortable, the difficult, to say the thing that you're not saying, to name the elephant in the room.
Acknowledge it rather than deny it. Just at least acknowledge it and notice where you do kind of deny it and jump back. I suppose a good start. That's
I think that's a really powerful one because it can be so, you know, extreme in terms of wanting to not do it or wanting to go too far. And there's something about what you just said, like there's an acknowledgement, a naming. You don't have to have a big thing about it, but it's like, oh yeah, this is, it's sort of like saying, this is also here.
Yes.
There's this love, there's this happiness and joy. This anger is also here. This trauma is also here. They're all here.
And that really sometimes is enough, isn't it? Just to release things to flow again. Just the release, get it out of the dungeon. So classic signs. Do you have a Scorpio classic sign to share with us, Jason?
Yeah, I you know, it's funny because I was thinking who, and then I realized, oh, I have to share, you know, Georgia O'Keeffe, the artist, and partly because she's also a person who lived here most of her life and really loved the desert in part because of how, and described the desert as a place that was unfriendly because it would, or unfriendly or indifferent to us because it would have its own experience. And but yet it would reveal and lay bare the truth, right? I mean, Georgia O'Keeffe's art, if people aren't familiar, most people probably have seen something of hers at some point. The two themes of her art that I think of, at least, and I think most of her artists, you'll see lots of like skulls of animals and bones lying on the desert, you know, just like the, and they're perfectly clean, which is exactly how you find them in the desert here. You know, if you, they're just totally clean and just, so you'll see that in her paintings. And then she also did all these really just like lusciously sexual paintings of flowers that really people can compare to female genitalia. Like there's just like a sexual vibration. So it's like, I really find her, those two dimensions of Scorpio, like that, you know, really lush, sexual, alive, fertile, because we haven't talked about some of those things, but Scorpio is also all of that, right? I mean, that underworld is very loamy and got a lot of stuff in it. And then the bones, you know, just like the harshness of the desert, right? That that just puts it right at you.
And you're in Scorpions Santa Fe?
I'm in Santa Fe, and she moved out here to Abiquiu, which is about maybe an hour's drive up, and, you know, was drawn out here by the land more than anything.
Right.
And she has Sun in Scorpio, Mercury, Jupiter, and then we don't know the time very well. Like the Rodin rating is very poor, but some people say Moon and Ascendant also in Scorpio.
Oh, imagine, that would be great. Don't you wish you knew? I have to say to anyone, if you ever get the chance to ask someone that's famous or whatever for their birth time, please do for all of us.
Do it for all of us.
Yeah, take one for the team, ask the question. Right. So for my classic sign, I wish I had done that. It's Valley Myers, and I have had the opportunity. Mm. She has since died, so she is in the next world now. But she's got Moon in Scorpio. Mm. It's trine Pluto in Cancer. She was actually a Leo, so I use her a lot for the Leo, but she's not a pure Leo because you can see the Scorpio so strong as well. Mm. So it's a great example of that blend. She's got this big red mane. She was a dancer. She studied dancing formally. She was an artist after that. But she was rocking the opium chic in Paris in the 50s on the left bank. The photos from that time to me are so scorpionic. Wow. She's semi-living in the street. She was like doing it rough. I knew her in Melbourne when she'd come back because I had been obsessed, Scorpio keyword, for years. And she moved into my building, and I'm like, I'm going around and knocking on her door. So she was very scary and intimidating, which I just loved so much. And but beautiful and warm was my own intimidation. Yeah, you can just see it. So Valley, V-A-L-I, Myers, her artwork is really fine ink. She's got Venus in Virgo. So to me, there's the Venus in Virgo showing up. And it's got a Scorpio soul. She's very 60s. She was also big in the 60s. So she's got that feeling, and that look is in her artwork as well. When she moved in, she was in her 70s. And she's just, you don't see this so much, this older woman that is wild, undomesticated bohemian. It was so inspiring. So one of her quotes is, "Let it all be animal, my life and death, hard and clean like that, anything but human. A lot I care with me, hopping with my red heart in the dark earth and my tattooed feet following the animal ways." I think that's very much Scorpio. And a lot of her quotes are like that. They're really just like, just give me the meat. And not what would you think, you know, of a 70-something-year-old lady. She just completely breaks that stereotype and a very gypsy, very intoxicating person. Like, I remember she smelt really wild. She doesn't try to cover up her smell.
Yeah. Right.
And I had to flirt with her. She had that, what would you call it, enigmatic. She was very enigmatic and magnetic, that Scorpio magnetism.
And that's very Scorpio, yeah.
And because she embraced her power, you know, it was extra. And when you were talking about that big energy, that's what she had. A lot of women were really drawn to that, which I thought was interesting. If there's a few movies on her and you can see the whole crowd that come to her stuff, it's like the astrology verse. There's a sprinkling of boys, and it's like all these women are just magnetized to her, because it's so rare, I think, to experience that. Just such a
To feel somebody who's really so in touch with their own power, and to be living that way,
wild.
You're reminding me that one of the most important Scorpios in my life was a woman named Susan Green, and she was kind of like my mother, a spiritual mother that I met when I was 16, first person I felt truly seen and loved by, you know, and who fiercely loyal, fiercely alive in herself. And you know, that kind of, there's just an uncompromising quality with Scorpio energy, right? That can be intimidating, like what you're describing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was one of the things that Georgia O'Keeffe had that same reputation of, like, people would be uncomfortable around her because of that potency. But then, of course, also magnetized and drawn
yes.
by her,
yeah.
you know, just what you're describing.
And potency, that's a great word. Mm. Yeah, they feel
yeah.
potent and they'll say the thing, mm. which is why people fear, I think, because mm-hmm. they're going to mm. just say it. And she really did as well, which is awesome when it's to someone else, not you.
Right, yeah, right.
Let's move on to the monthly moon. So we've got a new moon, October 25, 6:49 a.m. I think that's New York time, Eastern, with a partial solar eclipse. So eclipse season is upon us, 2 degrees Scorpio. So pretty early in on the scene. Mm-hmm. Venus is going to be still with the sun, having only just made the star point conjunction. It's also trine Mars, and then it's square the modern ruler, if you look at it that way, Scorpio. So it's making an aspect to both, whichever mm-hmm. one you use. So this is really coming up into a balance these days. I always use the word gnarly for the squares to intense planets. So there's doubling up on a pressure cooker of look at a certain theme, I think, in one's life. Mm-hmm. Taking action is definitely the way to go with that nice trine to Mars. What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the potency of this Venus being with having just come out, as you said, out from the Venus star, and then the three of them really being together in this eclipse. And, you know, and by the way, right at, you know, the Venus will be at the 3 degrees of Scorpio, right? So it's the moon's hardest degree, supposedly, you know, the fallen degree. And so to me, the fallen is really a good invitation for Scorpio, right? There's really something about an opening up of really the beauty of the underworld, so to speak, the beauty of the shadow, the beauty of the things that are hidden from usual perception, you know. And for me, that's anytime we have a solar eclipse, and of course this is a relatively minor one in terms of what you know, the astronomy of it, but anytime we have a solar eclipse, there's a way that, if you've ever been in a solar eclipse, you know, the day, night basically breaks into day. That's really literally what happens, right? There's like a black area where the sun is occluded, so it becomes, you know, night there, and it's quite powerful. And so night breaking into day is a very evocative image, like things can come in that are usually not able to be seen. And so with Venus there, for me, that's also unbidden desires, like things that have not suppressed desires. You know, Venus in Scorpio is so often connected to the taboo sexualities, whatever they are at a given culture, at a given time, right? They've changed. I mean, you know, what was once taboo is not, but, you know, whatever in oneself has been unauthorized will probably be coming surging forward for people at that time, right? Like with Venus being part of this eclipsing energy, it's like there's like desires, there are curiosities, there are things you're drawn towards, and the draw will be stronger. And I kind of go back to that Mary Oliver thing, you know, or not Mary Oliver, Rumi, right? When he says, let yourself be silently drawn by the stronger pull of what you really love. You know, it's that kind of, there's something very potent in this. Then Venus and the moon are, you know, they're both in a different, you know, Scorpio is said to be a harder sign for both of them, right? It's the fall of the moon and the detriment of Venus. But what I always think that means is that they just have a sort of a journey that they're making. You know, there's something they have to work with. So I think it's a really beautiful eclipse from that perspective, you know, like the perspective that wants to embrace the night that wants to be experienced, particularly desires.
And I think with the square to Pluto might be, it's a challenge to do that. You might not want to, it might, yeah, you're going to have to break through somehow.
Yeah, right. There's the potential of resistance would be, you know, strong, notable for sure. One of the other trines that is there is the trine to Black Moon Lilith in Cancer, and, you know, certainly an ally to the kind of journeying that we are talking about, right? And so I noticed that one. And then there's also a trine to Juno in Pisces. So there's this grand water trine that opens up. And
beautiful.
That's deep stuff. Like, that's really like really getting into a deep immersive experience that I think will be really helpful for the various other things going on coming in that month, which are quite a few.
Yes. And also I noticed just kind of going through the month on the horoscope wheel, just forwarding each day and looking the patterns, there are a few periods where there's big water trines as well to take us through the month, even though there's a lot of really gnarly. There's a lot of red when I go through looking at aspects. So right. It's true. It is there, but you've got to go the waterway as the
helper. Exactly.
You have to go
as the
way.
Resourcing. Exactly. Yeah, those water trines that will open up. Cause there's the Juno Lilith and then there's the Neptune Pallas Athena with all the Scorpio. Yeah. So it's like those energies Jupiter. To me. Oh, and Jupiter back to Pisces. Yeah. And so it's like, to me, that is really part of what can help us flow with a lot of the tricks. And the other thing that is striking to me is that, Mars is slowing down, a week after that eclipse, it stations. Mm. So this slow stationing, retrograding Mars is so, again,
taking back.
It rules all the Scorpio planets. Exactly.
Yeah.
Take it back. Yeah. Experience it. Stay with it. Don't flinch. Don't run. Just stay there.
Get behind the wheel of it.
Yeah.
Yes. So
it's that kind of experience. That might be, by the way, now that we're talking about it, it's like, that's one of the things I often think about with Scorpio process. When I'm with someone who's maybe more triggered in Scorpio process, my experience is that what I need to do is neither move closer nor move further away. I just stay. And I emphasize to the person who's in it. And by in it, what I mean is like, they could be in Scorpio overwhelm and feeling abandoned and betrayed. Mm. They could be being big and bad in Scorpio revenge. They could be doing all these different things. And I've had them all in my consulting room at one time or another. And my experience is like, if I just sit there, Taurus, right? If the polarity, if I just sit there, I don't go towards, I don't try to like create more connection or engage the conflict, but I also don't abandon or dissociate or check out or run away or cower. If I just stay. And so when I saw that stationing Mars, it's like, it's quite a way through, because it's, this is intense astrological weather, and being able to just stop and be with is to me a very potent way to work with Scorpio, because it actually takes some of the drama out, because Scorpio can get into a lot of drama. I'll just say that.
Not speaking from personal experience.
Yeah, of course not. Of course not. Of course not. What did you say?
What they say about me.
Right.
So yes, well, that makes me think of the fixed quality of Scorpio as well, that being able to stay with something, that makes a lot of sense. There's Taurus and then there's Scorpio's own fixed nature. So that makes so much sense why that would be a gift and a resource and a way to deal with it. And it's Scorpio season. Why not go with it and embrace it? The cosmos is layering it on for us, dialing up the intensity, and we've got the eclipses to dial that up. Just embrace it, dive into it.
Yeah.
Acknowledge it. I like that.
Run in the water's fine.
Yeah. What's that fin?
yeah, right, exactly. Oh no, there are fins in there for sure.
Full moon is November 8th at 6:02 AM Eastern. Mm. Full moon, lunar eclipse. A total eclipse. Oh, I'll say it's on that new moon, the last one, because they always link back to something. It was October 14, 2004, around that place. So that's that one.
I see what you mean. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So any themes from back then, if you keep a good diary, which always keep a good diary so you can use the astrology. Mm. This one's at the full moon, back to the full moon, is at 16 Taurus. Total. The last time that one happened links back to October 28th, 2004, which was also total. This one is in a T-square, also very gnarly. Saturn is at the apex of the T-square in Aquarius. It is conjunct the North Node and Uranus, because in Taurus, it's trine to that Neptune, so you get that water trine again. Opposite, obviously, the Sun, which is conjunct Mercury and still conjunct Venus. opposite. I've written its opposite rule of Venus. Yeah, so it's
because of Venus, there's a, which is also in fall. Running close to Venus. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Which is mm-hmm. also in fall. So it's mm-hmm. definitely gnarly, but again, there's helpmates there and ways out, which is Neptune. And I haven't looked at the asteroids, which maybe there are some, which like you noticed in the new moon. There's loads of really minor aspects through the whole month too, like loads and loads. So there's loads on this, which I don't mention so much, but there's so many. I just thought I'd mention it without going into detail. It just sounds like crisis and transformation.
And to me, it's like, yeah. And like the idea of, again, like digging up things that need to be freed, you know, like when I see that one, the Uranus and Taurus really what speaks to me especially. And I see the Uranus and Taurus as very much like, I talked about this in one of the webinars for Astrology University, but it's like freeing the Minotaur, you know, freeing that place that has been trapped underground. It's like there's some liberation in it. And of course, the Saturn square is going to want to keep it down. You know, the Saturn is going to want to keep it. Wait. This is not authorized. This is not allowed.
Where's your permit?
Coming forward. Yeah, right. Where's your permit? Exactly. But that thing's coming forward. You know, the nature of eclipses, it's dragon energy, right? Like the thing is coming forward. And there is one, you know, with Ceres, who I guess technically is not an asteroid, but we seem to still call her one, but she's trying to sextile that eclipse, you know, and from Virgo. I think that's a really good one, right? Because there's grounding in Ceres, the goddess of the grain, you know. And we also know that Ceres, more than anybody, knows about trauma and trips to the underworld, you know, having her daughter Persephone taken there. So that is an area that really good Virgo medicine that could be helpful to this is really comes to my mind too, you know, like really focusing on routines of daily living, things that keep you sort of solidly on the ground and taking care of things and not getting too caught up in how dramatic all of it is. Because it seems very dramatic to me. You know, here in the United States, that will be Election Day.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So, intense. I mean, very intense. Likely to be a lot of drama, likely to be all kinds of, you know, things coming out of the dark, good, bad, and indifferent. And so I think there's the grounding piece is really an important one to sort of hold with
interesting.
That.
Interesting. I was thinking, just looking at this, gosh, it's like something's going to break through and release like this. It's so intense. I wondered in mundane astrology, what's going to happen? What's going to break through?
I think shock factors. And I think the other thing might be the word extreme comes to mind when we're thinking about Scorpio and that kind of energy, you know, the intensity that can constellate around that. You know, again, it really, this eclipse also just highlights again, the Saturn-Uranus square, right?
It
totally draws that into focus at another level. And so you've got all the Saturn holding on and all the Uranus trying to break it open and both sides being both things, you know, it's not to say one or the other. I really don't think so. I mean, you can see Saturnian and Uranian elements in all the zones. And the tension of that though, is just, it's quite powerful. And at the breaking point in many situations. So eclipses, you know, can really bring things to a fulcrum. So it does have intensity. And that's again why, from my way of thinking, the grounding, the holding, the containing becomes really especially important and a powerful way to stay in touch with one's own reality.
Yeah.
And therefore also then to determine how best to respond, right?
I think it's going to be wild time. And yeah, that square has been, you know, so associated with people protesting against traditional, well, you know, established rules and established ways. I wonder if this will set something off as well. So it would be no surprise there if that happened. Let's get to the headlines. Mars retrograde is a headline because it's also out of bounds for 7 months.
Right.
And Tony's the out of bounds king. I'm definitely not all over it, but I am somewhat, and he's piqued my interest. So I always watch these things and watch people with out of bounds planets, including myself. Explains a lot. It goes out of bounds through October 22. to May 4th. So it's during the retrograde as well. It'll also be out of bounds. Did you look into that?
I don't really know. I didn't know. I mean, I had heard that it would be out of bounds. I'm not as fluent in that stuff with declination. You know, the retrograde, certainly.
I'll just say this with, like, on top of the retrograde in mischievous Gemini, it's already so mischievous. Mm. I think it would just amplify that its mischievous nature. Mm-hmm. And there's so much about Mars being the god of war. I think of in Gemini, it's all about that data hacking is the new.
Oh, that's interesting.
Way of warfare.
Yeah.
And digital and cyber, and it's on. So out of bounds will make that very interesting. So I wonder what will happen with that. Of course, yeah, with elections coming up, that's how countries will do it. It's working on the US. It's so divided already. And I'll hand it over to you to talk about the retrograde.
One of the things that I've been thinking about with the Mars and Gemini, just to start there, even retrograde or not, is there's a resourcefulness to that Mars in my experience. There's a try every possibility kind of quality to the Mars in Gemini. It thinks of every possible thing it could do and then wants to do them all and often succeeds. It's a very plucky little Mars, you know, and it can do that. And so then when I think about the retrograde, it's like, it can have this feeling where it's like, oh, I've got all these things. And then to feel like, oh, I can't quite get there. And a really big thing that comes up for me about it is the notion of the necessity that a retrograde Mars seems to have, which is partly that you have to get help. You have to ask for assistance. You have to, you know, seek that, you know. And one of the things about the Mars retrograde is that it does happen with a grand trine to Saturn in Aquarius and Mercury in Libra.
Fabulous.
And also Vesta, say again, sorry.
That's fabulous. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So that's when it stations, that's going on. And so to me, that's really also about connection. It's about like, you know, I think about like the notion of mutual aid, you know, that is very alive, like in minority communities here, like that, you know, you come to each other's assistance in a situation that is a bit overwhelming, and you create community. You air signs, you know, one of the beauty of air signs is they know how to come together and relate. And since the Mars function will be a little bit diminished, that ability to kind of feel like I'm doing it on my own, I think it really invites a relating and assisting one another. That's kind of what comes into my mind when I think about that time, is like communication and really being intentional about that, you know, versus trying to go it on one's own. Because Mars retrograde, in my experience with it, is very, you just get turned back on yourself in some way when you are trying to do it, you know, in the usual Mars way, right?
Like, yeah, not go forward. Well, something I noticed was with the social media, there are these rich white guys. Oh, no, not all white, actually. Kanye, who is now Yay, was talking about buying a platform. Elon Musk is talking about buying Twitter, and someone else was talking about buying something else. So they have control over those, like going back and like their platform is that they want free speech. I think that might mean completely unmoderated speech, but I thought that was interesting looking at this Mars turning back in Gemini, as well as, you know, amplified with the outer bounds. So who knows what will come of that, but I thought that was just interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it really can feel like when Mars stations in particular, it can feel a little bit like, where did my get up and go, got up and went? You know, like where did my forward momentum go? You know, that I think is, and I think that we're already feeling that. I certainly am. You know, it's moving very slowly already, that Mars. And so it's like there's a experience that, and it's so unnatural for Gemini process especially, right? Which tends to be movement. So I do think there's going to take a minute for everybody to kind of figure out like, oh, how do we do that in this period? You know, like it's all these ideas, but how do I move on it?
Interesting. So flipping back, it makes me think of something that I've just decided to do actually, which I don't know if it fits into this, but it feels like it does. I've decided I'm going to go to, my publisher is in England, but they're owned by a big publisher that's actually Australian in Melbourne. And so I've already emailed them to ask if I can come an adult intern, because I am so curious about publishing. And I love them there. I always meet up with them when I go to Melbourne. And I've just noticed they've returned my emails. Read it to see if that's a yes or a get lost. Yeah, I just want to like follow someone around, or maybe have a few people I follow around in different jobs and ask lots of questions. And I said, I'm really good at proofreading. I can do something.
So Geminian, I love it. It's like twinning someone.
Twinning someone like and going back. Shadowing, you know, Right. But going, you know, turning back, like you wouldn't think I'd have to do that, because I'm already so ahead in terms of publishing and everything, but I leapt ahead and I missed 1,000 steps. I didn't do this in a like step-by-step way. And I feel like there's a lot of space that I would like to go back over that ground and just get some information around that. And, but in a flit around kind of Gemini Mars way.
Oh, it's really interesting. Like listening to you speak about that, I'm realizing my one of maybe my Mars and Gemini retrograde project, you know, you and I were talking about record keeping and notes and things like that. And I'm really, as I told you, I'm really focused on my writing now. Yes. And but a huge project that must happen is that I must go through all of my records and notes and little 2-page this and, you know, one paragraph inspired that. And, you know, I have like thousands, many of them are called, I mean, the worst, right? The worst is many of them are called untitled 12, untitled 3. You know how the computer will,
can't even search.
Like, I don't even have them titled. No, I mean, it's terrible. So that's gonna be my version of like going back and going through all the information and linking it up in the way that it needs to be linked up. And it'll probably take a good 6 months.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Linking it up is a really good way to put that. Yeah. And the image that also was coming to my mind is that way of saying herding cats. It's like herding cats.
Perfect metaphor.
Yeah, so, and I've,
the cats of our thoughts. Yeah, the cats of our thoughts also.
Yeah, too. And all the little links because, you do take all these little notes and there's so many of them. Oh my gosh, I've got piles. So, it's going to take ages to put all that together. I've bought a filing cabinet, which is empty. But over this period, that's what I was also feeling like doing. So, depending
on indexing, there's an indexing quality.
And this is going to be opposite all my Sagittarius in my first house, like get myself organized so I can move forward, because I'm feeling a lot of forward momentum, but there's definitely a turn back and go over something. That's also interesting. Like with the publisher, that's interesting and that's energizing. With the filing, we'll see. Interesting, because I'm
very honest answer.
we'll see but I am interested to find all those golden little nuggets I've written down, and
that's the thing, isn't it? There's stuff in there. It just needs attention, and retrograde Mars definitely slows things down enough to pay attention, you know.
It's definitely not a powering forward, it's flipping back to then go forward much more unfettered.
Right That's great. Thanks for helping me identify my Mars and Gemini. I really mean it. No, I'm like, oh, this feels good. This is good Mars medicine.
Well, same. It's, things are clarifying. I love conversation for that reason. And so what else is big? We've got the 28th of October is the retrograde Jupiter moves back into Pisces for a bit. So back into, you know, empathy, that mystical, the expansion, I think the empathy is a good thing, the compassion, the free-floating anxiety, I hyphenate all of this, the mystical, artistic, spiritual escapist binge fest, the inner emotional and psychic landscape, which is perfect for Scorpio season. What are you thinking about that retrograde, you know, talking about scooting back and picking up on something?
You know, it's interesting. It does feel like, it feels good. Like when you just did this motion with the kind of swimming, like being, it felt like being drawn into the waters. I felt like, you know, like being pulled back into the waters of Pisces, you know.
That's my Mars in Pisces.
That's okay. Yes. Right. Of course, my Scorpio planets are like, oh, that feels good.
Yeah. That's the waterway. But it is, isn't it? It's like when you think of the ocean, when the water comes up, and then it takes things off the shore. It's very gentle sort of, and brings it back into that water. That's, I'm going with this. This is where it's going.
And Jupiter feels at home in Pisces. So there's something about that that feels like, okay, the home. And one of the things that I think about with it when I think of the Aries, Pisces, and when things go back and forth over there is just, you know, that start, you know, start factor of the first sojourn into Aries, especially the first round, is like so strong. And it can really feel relaxing to get pulled back into Pisces.
Very
again.
Relaxing.
Okay, let me remind myself that I'm part of a connected world. Because when you're in Aries at the beginning, you feel quite alone often. And, you know, like the new impulse is kind of like unclear. And so, yeah, there's a little bit of I think of this as a resource, especially because it's going to domicile, you know? So it's like,
yes.
To me, it's like it's resourcing. Jupiter is resourcing. So meaning our hopefulness, our optimism, like those are very important, especially with what we were just talking about with the, you know, intensity of some of the other stuff. Uranus, Saturn, and all that. It's like, to me, there's a way that it's like connecting up with, and I've always felt like Jupiter in Pisces has like got a faith notion, you know, not faith in a particular thing, but just faith in the universal. Like, yes, there's something bigger here. I think that will be so helpful.
Yes. Yeah. I'm thinking I can see that where it will play in, and it's so limitless, and it's so, the faith is limitless too. It's like high faith in people, in yourself, in something greater, right. Which is the most important, I'd say. So there's less maybe fear.
Exactly. And there's a sort of surrender, you know, Pisces is very good at that, at that experience of surrender and the feeling of ride the waves, you know, like go be with the waves and trust that you'll be carried. You know, there's a, and, you know, people are, of course, we're all in radically different situations in a million different ways and access to resource, all of that. But one of the things about, you know, Jupiterian, nobody can ever take your Jupiter away, you know, the Jupiter function, meaning the ability to envision something more, the ability to dream, the ability to hope, and to stay with your own truth. All of those are always with us, even when we are people really subject to all sorts of Saturn confinements and overwhelms and lack and various things that all of us in varying degrees are faced with. Nevertheless, Jupiter and there is vision that remains, you know, and so something to remember with Jupiter in Pisces, a huge mega resource, actually, I think.
Absolutely. Embrace Jupiter. So look at where Jupiter's transiting in your chart and where it is natally, because it's going to pick up on that. Look at what was happening at that time that it first went over that area. I actually think of this as really positive. It's like we got a first trial. In the territory that it went, and when it goes back over, we get a second go, knowing, okay, what can we do with this? So that whole period, I was looking at it as a trial period. I've been watching it, and the adult intern thing, I suppose, it's like you get to intern something, you get to try it out and test it, and you get a heads up, because then you get to go back and take a second run at it. And the same, you could say the same with Mars or any retrograde planets. If you know that it's in that shadow zone, the pre-retro shade, it's not a real word, but I think it's becoming so, it's, you know, pre-retro shadow shade. It's a test zone. You're testing, like your A-B testing, I suppose. You get to walk around the track and check it out, and then you get to go the track properly.
Yeah, totally.
Just thought of that. I wish I put it in my book. Damn it.
Yeah. One of those golden things to index with Mars, Mars retro and Gemini.
Going in the filing cabinet. Then we've got on the 29th, Mercury of October, Mercury moves into Scorpio. So that's when it's, starts to move into find the sun, and we're all on board with digging down, looking for secrets, following mysteries, following clues, perhaps seeing things where there is nothing. Here's a clue. It's communication style changes. So it's that emotional, like watching the tells. I like to think of the water signs, like the body language, noticing what's not said.
Yeah, that's very Mercury in Scorpio, I think. And the ability to say things without saying them, you know, I mean, it's like it's you know, Mercury in Scorpio can really it's so acerbic sometimes, just really, you know, and really just say exactly the thing that renders it all, you know, clear, renders it all there. It's like, it's like a, and also sometimes like a, one of the things I find with Mercury in Scorpio too is there's a disclosures of things that haven't been disclosed before, right? There's a you know, again, it's the psychopomp aspect of Mercury that sort of says, let's go down and look at something. I'm going to show you something you haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Let you have a conversation with the dead, you know, have a conversation with the shadow and we'll retrieve something, you know, from there.
So I noticed something Brian Clark says about the Scorpio vibe. You could look at it as Pluto as well. Maybe says it about Pluto, but I thought it was such a great insight was visit things that were buried undead, excavate it so that you can kill it off properly, like put it to rest properly so you can move on. So you're not sort of stunted at that, this thing rotting undead in pain. And I thought that was one of the most perfect ways of looking at anything. So with Mercury there, you can really discuss it and get around it and find it and talk about it. And you're going to be drawn to doing that. It's going to come up anyway, potentially.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I don't even think you have to dig very deep because I think things are coming up anyway, right? Like there's a way that these eclipses will tend to like bring stuff up.
Yes.
And, you know, we have our guide of souls, Mercury in Scorpio, to help us face that, work with that, understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. So embrace those conversations. Looking forward to that. 30th of October, Mars retro in Gemini, of course, begins. In November, we've got that full moon eclipse on the 8th. 17th of November, Mercury moves into Sagittarius. So foot goes straight into mouth. Truth bombs galore. Lots of comedy and exaggeration and maybe letting loose of those secrets that you were told during sex. So don't do that. The secret. Maybe it's a good thing to remember always, like people know, you know, this is just between us, or, you know, what happens in whatever land stays in whatever land, you know, because Sagittarius is about like broadcasting. And if you don't want something broadcast, maybe be clear about that and have boundaries around that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is like also, I think, you know, we're in that period of the Mercury cycle where it's overtaken the sun at that point. And so it's running ahead into Sagittarius, you know, and it's like the mouth can blurt out something that the person is not ready to integrate, right? The sun is that integration. And so it's sort of like, it's going ahead of it. It's getting ahead of oneself, you know, that's the potential a lot of times of that kind of thing.
Interesting. Yeah. And wanting to take it faster. That's an interesting way to look at it within that cycle, actually.
Yeah, he's getting all excited.
Look what I discovered. Look what I found. Free the truth. And the Scorpio season is still like, no, they'll kill us all. They'll burn us. Don't tell them. I'll move on to just quickly the nonprofit promo segment. So this was suggested by Jason because it's in your area. It's the TiwaWomenUnited.org, located in the ancestral Tiwa homelands of northern New Mexico. Tiwa Women United is a multicultural and multiracial organization founded and led by Native women. The name Tiwa Women United comes from the Tiwa words we don ji mu, which can be translated as we are one, very Jupiter in Pisces. And that's in mind, heart, and in the spirit of love for all. And they've got three main program branches, which cover women's health and justice, environmental health and justice, women's leadership, and economic freedom. So they're at Tiwa, T-E-W-A, womenunited.org. Go have a look at their site, donate, get involved, or as I always like to remind people, maybe something in your area that you could be part of or initiate.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, I'm really glad to be naming them, and hope people will send support their way, because it's a really powerful way to very directly support thriving women-led Indigenous peoples. And it's really, I'm familiar with several of their projects and also actions here as well, because they've really been involved in a really forward way. So it's exciting. Yeah.
So thank you for recommending them and shining a light on them as well. They look cool. So when opportunity knocks, I think we've already discussed that in terms of aspects. It's really go towards when those big water trines are on. The moon will set off a couple of those. So when the moon moves through Cancer, on my many notes, when the moon's in Cancer, there's going to be a great trine. November 3, moon in early Pisces. Early Pisces is good. The 7th of November, Mercury will be conjunct the sun. So that's great for some insight. And then November 13, 14, depending on where you are, moon mid to later Cancer sets off grand water trines with Neptune and then hits Jupiter. So there's going to be gnarly stuff going on all month too, but they were the standouts. Can't beat a grand trine, can you?
Right. Yeah. Very resource thing.
Key takeaway and monthly mantra. Do you have either?
I didn't have a mantra, but I think if I really just take a moment to feel it, that's what I'm going to say. I don't know who said this first, but I have always liked it. It's very Scorpio. Feel it to heal it.
Yes. You've got to feel it to heal it. It's true. Yeah. I like that. Okay. I'll do the mantra then. I'm going to say I easily use my power constructively, all about constructive. Mm-hmm. There's so many you can say. I'll also say I easily feel I am safe and I trust my instincts. Trusting yourself, trusting those trust issues, and maybe acknowledging where you might not have trusted yourself or betrayed yourself, like turn it back on you.
I think that's so powerful for Scorpio. Yeah, in part because, like, you know, so there's no doubt that because Scorpio has been exposed to darkness and, you know, the paranoia process that can happen with Scorpio, and also just the general mistrust. But very, very frequently, what that really is about not trusting oneself. Yourself. Like that, I don't trust myself that I will take care of myself. So I'm trying to like control everything out here because I'm not trusting myself that whatever occurs, I will do what I need to do. And so that issue, like that mantra that you offered to me is core to Scorpio, because if you can really know that you will be there for you, then you have less need to get too worried about what other people do.
Absolutely. That's comes down to that for me with a lot of betrayal and trust issues, maybe not that happened in childhood, but as an adult, and we've all been there and we haven't listened to ourselves. And yes, it seems like, someone has done the thing, but we didn't trust ourselves to stop it earlier or tell them to rack off or put that boundary up. So we do lose trust and faith in ourselves. So that is so holistically healing if you can just accept that and forgive yourself and go forward in the future. Like, I can do it. I can tell them to get lost or no,
or whatever it is. Right.
Yeah. Whatever.
There's nothing more inspiring than when a Scorpio person has done that, because there's so much, then all that power is not wasted on trying to manage, you know, all the threats. But is actually just like
it's consolidated. The power consolidates. And that's someone like Valley or the lady you mentioned, that's what they have, right? Because they do that.
Yeah. I was thinking of your person. Exactly.
Our Scorpio persons. So what's on your coffee table that you would like to share that you're reading or have read?
I was just realizing that the one I had in mind, I think I actually had mentioned before, because I keep reading it, but I'm going to mention David Abrams' book, The Spell of the Sensuous. And I don't think I did mention that one the last time. It's an incredible book about David Abrams was one of the first people to be in what we might call deep ecology, you know, like, and to really look at the need for the human experience of the sensual world and of all the, and he also is the first person to coin the phrase, the more than human world, rather than creating nature as an abstraction, like nature and we're, you know, not nature. It was much more just all these various things that are more than human, including of course our ancestors and disincarnate beings, but also very importantly, the stones, the trees, the animals, the birds, you know, all of, and the winds themselves, the waters themselves. So the Spell of the Sensuous really encourages us to get back in there and out of just our little words, enclosures with words, and also insists that even our words themselves are coming out of a physical experience of reality. So it's very influential for me and as my astrology, like, because I'm constantly with astrology wanting to get behind the symbols and the signs and the techniques and all that and get into the physical, sensual, emotional experience of the zodiac and of the planets, beyond all the significations and, you know, alphabets of astrology.
Feel it.
Anyway, well, it's a long story, but
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying. And going back, well, going back to the core, going more to the root of things rather than trying to intellectualize the root of things and look at it from over there where you're safe.
Right, exactly. We don't want to talk about astrology. We want to be living astrology.
And how to connect the two.
Right.
I like it. That sounds beautiful. I might take a look at that myself.
Gorgeous book. Gorgeous book.
Well, I'm going to offer up again a moon in Scorpio people, the Astro twins, Ophi and Tali Adut, Sagittarians with a lot of Scorpio, including the moon. Their newest book, Super Couple, Astrology Secrets for a Sexy, Soulful and Satisfying Relationship with Any Zodiac Sign. That said, I like that in the book they say there's no guarantees. There's no guarantees, but when while you're in it, here are some great ways to approach things through looking at your composite chart. And they've done a massive book, as I mentioned earlier, and a breakdown of, it's a bit of a cookbook, lots of great guidance. They're wise sages with the Sag and the Scorpio, always a very interesting metaphysical combination, I have found.
It's, I agree.
538 pages, I know, because I read every single one. And if you're interested in, if you're interested in composite charts, like they're calling it this, the like super chart, the super couple chart that both your charts make, combining it to the midpoints. This is a way you can go about it, and they've got great helpful advice. It's very funny because they're Sagittarians, very insightful with the Scorpio, speaking to those more difficult things with a bit of slightly acerbic. I think they kind of. In real life, I think they could be very acerbic and, and hit a certain spot. I think that would be so funny, but they, I think they keep it a bit more on the professional side publicly. I really want to get to know what's underneath there personally, but I really enjoyed reading the book. I found myself reflecting a lot on relationships that I've had, and I made a lot of my composite charts to see if there were patterns. Indeed, there were patterns that came up, so very interesting. So if you want to sort of dive into that, there's a top tip for you. So that's just been published, and that's off the back of their Amazon Prime, interestingly, popular culture Sag Cosmic Love show. It was an astrological and social experiment dating show.
I haven't heard about this.
Very popular culture. It went a long way from what they'd pitched, but they stuck with it, and they used astrology for people that may not know any, and they slowly introduced ideas about, oh, well, what are your moons doing? Or you might have a mutual reception with your nodes and your moons.
Really?
That's pretty sophisticated
for pop culture.
Still very pop culture, but they did feed some of that in, which is pretty cool. So what we've got coming up, I'll go over Astrology University, and then we'll hear from you, Jason. And I notice you've got something coming up in and then what I'm doing. So head to astrologyuniversity.com, go to the events calendar. You'll see the upcoming events listed there. So there's a lot starting earlier in the season, the solar season. So when Jupiter returns, revisioning a wider horizon. So tap into Jupiter with Brian Clark, two things we've already spoken about. Beautiful teacher, very mythopoetic. He's got the Neptune there that just, he does that fold back and takes you into the world. So lovely. October 26 to November 20, the inner planets, Mercury, Venus, and Mars. And Tony Howard will take you through that. So week one is Mercury, week two, Venus, week three, Mars, and week four, the inner planets in action. And there's a bonus, Mercury and Venus with Stephen Forrest and Mars, our warrior Mars, our destroyer with Darby Costello. So there's some required texts for that. So if you're interested in these, just go and have a look at what you might need to get on with to prepare. If you've missed them, you can always go back, view on demand. So then we've got October 26 to November 20, inner and outer planets in combination. And that's with Jessica Murray. That's one of their program courses by the looks of it. Intro to Hellenistic course with Demetra George, October October 26 to November 20. So you'll need her required texts that she's written herself as well. Amazing teacher. I really want to do these. Vocation, mission and calling, October 26th to November 20, again with Brian Clark, teaming up power couple, Tony Howard, October 31 to, there's quite a lot actually in this semester, October 31 to November 23, chart interpretation 3, personality, moon phase and aspect patterns. And that's with Kelly 30s. November 5, Eclipse Essentials, Exploring Shadows and Light in Astrology with Kelly Surtees. November 12th, The House of Big Questions, Navigating the Ninth House with Jessica Murray. December 3rd, Venus and Psyche. Well, this is shooting ahead a little bit, but with Chase and Holly. Myth and Psyches, Part 1, Understanding Venus Through Her Loves and Lovers. Part 2, Understanding Venus Through Her Passions and Possessions. So there's another one where I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but you would have to plan for this. It's January 27 to 29, 2023, with Kelly Surtees. She's doing a personal predictions retreat. So jump on if you think you could attend that. It'll be in Palm Springs.
It's a good place to be in January.
Yeah. I want to go in Palm Springs. It's so cute. So what about you, Jason? What have you got coming up? I know you're doing lots of writing.
Yes. Yeah. I'm pretty focused that way. Although, yeah, I have a lot of, I'm going to be in Buenos Aires and Argentina and Uruguay for the month of November and quite a few events going on there. So for anybody listening from there, I'm not sure when I'll get all that posted to my site. It's all written in Spanish, but if somebody emails me, I'm happy to send that across to you if you're in that area or will be. My schedule right now is that I usually do some online experiential classes. We're starting tomorrow with the Earth Signs. I have a bunch of people for online experiential Zoom. So like just to give the feel of that, you know, everybody's bringing clay to their computer and we're all going to be working with clay to start the earth element. So we'll be squeezing clay together so we can kind of get into a body experience together. Just that's the kind of thing we do in those classes. So that's all full for this round, but I will be continuing to offer more of those.
Right.
And then a lot of experiential retreats, like 4 to 5 day all psychodrama, work with dreams. It's all very immersive kind of work. And then next year, I will begin doing some training for people who want to do experiential work with clients. Right. So in other words, ways to actually do the things that I usually do directly. So
fantastic. That's good to
know. Some of what's coming up, but my website will have things or people, there's a sign up for the mailing list on there too, so they can.
And that's jasonholly.net.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Okay, wonderful. And for me, it's the usual at the moment, which is I'm available for readings. Are you available for one-to-one consultation at the moment?
Yes, it probably will be 2023 at this point with scheduling, but yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you can find me at astroallstarswithaz.com and schedule in a one-to-one there. We can go over, I don't have all these different listings of things that you can do because it all comes under that one session. So if you want to look at relationship things, if you want to look at transits, if you want to map out and explore your chart, have a particular something, it's all welcome. So just schedule in there. My third book, Astro Power, is coming out within Scorpio season. So it's a Scorpio, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, right.
And that's on transits, lots of mythology and history and obviously humor because I'm a Sagittarius. I do poke fun at a few things in the mythology. And it's a deep dive into all the meaning of the planets, the fundamentals, where some of this came from. And really enjoyed writing it. Really enjoyed doing the research, watching 1,000 documentaries, tapping into ancient Greece and Rome and before that. So that's due out in the UK is the first publishing, which is November 10. And then in Australia, November 17. And then in the US, it's January, but you can buy it from a site in the UK, say Book Depository, and they've got free postage. So you can still get your hands on it when it's first released. So if you go on pre-order, they'll just shoot that out to you. So very worth reading. I think you'll learn a lot and you'll enjoy it. Great gift. It does take it to the next level. But if someone's a beginner, I've made it so that they'll get something out of it and they'll just enjoy. It'll be an enjoyable read. As usual, it's very pretty. Taurus rising.
Yay.
So that's the main things for me. And again, yeah, things will be on my Instagram or in my blog, whatever's coming up. Thank you, Jason, for coming.
Yeah, thanks.
This has been great, the longest one ever, but it's been a deep dive into the depths. And for everyone else, have a wonderful season of the witch, Scorpio season. And stay cosmic, girlfriends.
Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. Study astrology online with some of the great astrologers of our time at www.astrologyuniversity.com, where we offer webinars, online classes, and virtual summits to bring you inspiration, connection, and insight through the study of astrology. Take good care, and we'll see you next time.